I will talk about a theory of X-ray emission lines from high and low luminosity AGN. The title is a bit broader than I originally planned, and I'll later tell you why. Let me mention right away my collaborators, Tim Kalman and Dimas Kazanis at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and Chris Adon at University of Durham in UK. So I must thank James for an excellent talk and excellent introduction to the subject. So the process that we're going to study is schematically this. You have a cool accretion disk, the temperature is of the order of 10 to 5 K, and you have X-rays incident on the disk. Then you have X-rays hitting the disk. A few things can happen. You can Compton scatter out of the disk, or you can absorb the X-rays and then re-emit it as a continuum radiation or as a line emission. In order to solve the problem, you need to do four basic steps. You need to solve a radiation transfer through this optically thick disk atmosphere. You need to solve for ionization and energy balance at every point. And you also need to assume something about density, either constant or hydrostatic balance or outflow, whichever is appropriate for the problem. So the science, what you hopefully can get out of this, is the structure of the inner part of the accretion flow. And we have two competing pictures, as you know, for the accretion disk structure. And because of the amount of the disk underneath the X-ray sources is very different in these two models, you expect to see very different iron K alpha line characteristics. And you already seen this plot. Just to mention is that for neutral X-ray reflection, the only thing you do is, of course, radiation transfer. And you assume that matter is neutral. Well, life is more complicated than this, of course, so you need to worry about photonization of the accretion disk. And the first people to do it were Ross and Fabian in 1993, where we assumed density to be a constant, but had a very nice, appropriate treatment for the radiation transfer, ionization balance, and energy balance. And there were many other people involved in this, in particular Piotr Zhitsky and ours. And the main results can be summarized as following, but at low accretion rate, accretion rates or low luminosities, the disk is effectively neutral. And so you see something close to the neutral reflection. At high luminosities, and this particular number actually depends on the alpha parameter, but at something like 10% of Eddington limit, the reflected spectrum shows strong helium and hydrogen-like lines. And at the yet higher luminosities, it becomes completely ionized. And so no lines result from the disk. Yet the life is again more complicated because there is this thermal ionization instability. It was first discussed by Field in 1965, and then for photoionized plasmas, the concept was further developed by Sinyaev, Krolik, and others. And the main idea is the following. Suppose you have an optically thin parcel of gas, which is being illuminated by an intense X-ray radiation field. This parcel of gas sits in an ambient surrounding gas, so it's in pressure equilibrium with that gas. So you're really talking about a fixed pressure, given pressure. So you can ask a question, for a given pressure, what is the equilibrium temperature? That is the temperature at which radiative heating is equal to radiative cooling. And this is what this curve shows here. The y-axis is temperature in EV. The x-axis is ratio of the radiation run pressure to the gas pressure, so-called ionization parameter. Exactly at the curve, you have cooling equal to heating. Above the curve, you have cooling greater than heating. And below the curve, you have cooling less than heating. So because of the pressure, constant pressure condition, you're only allowed to move on vertical lines. So if you are here and you get a perturbation which takes you to higher temperature, because cooling is greater than heating here, you will fall back. And likewise, if you go to region with a lower temperature, heating there is greater than cooling, you'll go back. So this is an equilibrium situation here. This is a stable situation. On the other hand, these parts of the S-curve, that's how people like to refer to this curve here, were unstable. That if you go in either direction here, you will run away to a stable branch. So what you see is that for a given pressure, there are multiple solutions. And some of these solutions are thermally unstable. So you have to be careful to pick the right solutions. The other important thing is that if instead of fixing the pressure, you would fix the density, as we've done in earlier studies, then you're really going along these lines, like that, rather than vertical lines. And in this case, you will see that this part of the curve suddenly becomes stable, and parts of this curve also will become stable. So you get a completely different set of thermally stable and thermally unstable curves. So a couple of years ago, we decided to include the hydrostatic balance in the X-ray reflection codes. And this is in principle challenging because this is a highly nonlinear problem, and you need to make sure that your radiation field is in equilibrium with the ionization and energy balance of the matter, which in turn depend on the radiation field. So, but I should also mention that in principle we are doing nothing new, because these people here have looked at the problem before, slightly different problem, or for a slightly different parameter space. And for one of these reasons, none of these results were used to interpret X-ray reflection data until recently. So what we've done is we ran a set of models, one with constant density, the other with hydrostatic balance. And at the time, I was thinking that the hydrostatic balance is the only thing you need, so I call them self-consistent. It's actually not quite so, but it's a better approximation to reality, we hope, and the constant density model. So what I show here is the temperature profiles. That is a temperature as a function of Thomson depth into the disk. And the zero is at the top of the disk. So I'm going down to the disk. And what's being varied here is the magnitude of the incident X-ray flux. The spectral shape is the same, but as you increase the X-ray flux, clearly you have more and more of hotter material in both cases. Now, but on the top, you'll notice that you only have thermally stable solutions. And then there are sharp transitions between these solutions to avoid these unstable regions. With the constant density case, this is not so. You see that the temperature, all temperatures basically are allowed. And in short, there is these sets of curves are completely different. When you look at the spectra, you find that the spectra are also completely different. In the low flux limit, of course, you recover neutral reflection in both cases. So very similar. In the high flux limit, you also recover approximately the same results. That is a completely ionized disk, so that even iron is stripped of its electrons. But in the intermediate cases, you see that here you have only a neutral-like iron kappa line, and it's getting weaker and weaker as the depth of this layer, we call it ionized skin, is increasing. While here you have helium-like lines, because while these temperature ranges here are highly ionized, but they're not completely ionized. So a helium-like line is extremely strong, can be about 3 times stronger than the neutral line, and therefore it's observationally it's a huge difference. By the way, disclaimer here, but you don't need to read this. Now, so what does it imply for observations? To answer this question, we tried to simulate observations of one of my theoretical spectra with Ginga, and later with Aska. So Ginga was a satellite which was sensitive in the range from 2 to 20 keV. So all you see is just this window here. And the trick is that we, because of the highly ionized skin, which is sort of like a partially transparent mirror, the reflected spectrum is mostly power law as well, with a very weak line. So when you use a simple model, a constant density model, you find that you need much more incident power law and much less reflection. This is the real reflection component there, but that's what you recover from the FITs. So it looks to you like there is much less cold matter than there actually is. So implications for the results that were known back then, and also what James mentioned, is that in principle, the objects that have weak iron kappa lines can be simply disks that go all the way down to the last stable orbit, but because of a high luminosity at hard spectrum, which is important, you completely ionized the skin, and so the line is weak. So I should also mention that David Ballantyne, Randy Ross, and Andy Fabian have done a lot of work on this since our paper on the subject. We also included hydrostatic balance. This is a very active field right now, and you see some of the temperature profiles from the paper. And there are also our people involved in this effort now, our groups. And unfortunately, detailed comparison between the codes shows that there are some pleasing broad agreements between the codes. But yet, if you look at the details, there are also important disagreements. So we still have work to do here, so it's clear. Now, what else can you do with the what our science can you learn from this? Well, one amazing thing is that if you take an X-ray source of a given luminosity and just vary its height above the disk, like in this cartoon here, then you can actually tell by the spectrum how high above the disk the source must be, because with a given luminosity, of course, when you put it very close to the disk, the area immediately below the disk, below the flare, sees a huge X-ray flux, so it can be highly photoionized. While if you put it very high above the disk, the area illuminated is really very large, and so the X-ray flux can be relatively small. And that's important because while X-ray Compton heat the gas, the soft disk radiation from the disk itself, Compton cools it. So there's a balance between heating and cooling here, and that is reflected in the maximum temperature reached on this Compton cooled branch. And what we show here is simulations where the X-ray flux, X-ray spectrum and flux is fixed, but we're adding disk blackbody radiation at 10 electron volts in this case. And the first curve there has no disk flux at all. Then you have the same amount of disk flux, twice the X-ray flux, and so on. So you can see what it gets cooler and cooler. And of course, that is reflected in the temperature profiles. This is a series of models with increasing X-ray flux, but keeping Fx to F disk the same. Here is, I think it's 1/8, and here it is more like I think it was chosen to be 100 or so, which you may expect from powerful magnetic flares. So the skin in the flare's case completely ionized, so you can kill the line. In this case, you cannot. So you can, rule some of these models out, and these are the spectra resulting from these models. So this is with the X-ray source high above the disk. You see what the line never completely disappears, and you see lots of soft X-ray features, while in the other case, it basically features power law at high luminosity. I believe this is one of these must be the fit what James showed. And the interesting science here is that when we tried to fit it with these models, we found that we need Lx to be at least 10 times greater than the luminosity available in optical UV band. But unfortunately, we have both optical UV and X-ray data for the source, so we can see what it is there. And there, the ratio is actually inverse. It's X-rays are only a tenth of the optical UV. So our interpretation of this is that the X-ray source must be really very close, sources must be really close to the disk in order to produce high X-ray flux locally underneath these regions. So let's see. This is just a parameter search. With this Lampost model, what you can do is you can, this is a hard X-ray spectrum, gamma of 1.6. This is typical for hard state of galactic black hole candidates. What you can do is you can vary the X-ray luminosity and also the accretion rate through the disk. And I have different things here, such as the line equivalent width, the peak and the line emission. So green is 6.4, yellow is 6.7. You can look at the reflection fraction. You can look at the inner radius or perceived inner radius of the disk from these models, which is, I have the disk going all the way down to the last stable orbit, but because of small radii, the disk becomes ionized. You don't see the line there. So you see that if you have high Lx to a Ledington, the inner disk basically disappears from your view. And the line, most of the time, is still neutral-like. So this is similar to what's being observed. Now, if I switch to a softer X-ray spectrum, now because the skin is not completely ionized, most of the time you actually see a 6.7 keV line. And if you look at the line equivalent width, it never really disappears. And it can be very much stronger than the neutral line. So this is a completely different situation, and also the inner disk almost never disappears from your view, only for, you know, X-ray luminosities, in this case much more above Eddington, which is a bit of a trick, of course, and this is just a spectra to show you through the hard illuminating spectra. So you basically kill the broad line there, as you can see, for high luminosities. And this is soft spectra, so the broad lines never really disappear in this case, although we do get weaker too. So now there's a little bit on this controversy about the relativistically broadened oxygen 8 Lyman alpha line. We haven't published anything on this, but I tried to make a similar parameter search, running lots of models and trying to determine how much of equivalent width I could produce. And the best we came out with is really just several EV in this line here. The other trouble is that quite often we saw oxygen 7 1 to 2 transition, and also a very strong recombination continuum plus some iron L lines. So our conclusion is that it's difficult to reproduce the observed strength of the lines. And I should also mention that David Ballantyne and Andy Fabian have done much more work on this than I did. We have actually published two papers. And in the first paper, we fixed the iron K alpha. We fit the iron K alpha line, first of all. And then we fixed the parameters and said, well, let's see now what we can get for oxygen 8 line. And in this case, we just got, I believe, 5 or 10 EV, way too small. In the second paper, which is, and that's the main plot in our paper, we said, well, let's forget about iron K alpha constraints and just survey the parameter space and find the best conditions for the oxygen 8 Lyman alpha line. And what we find is that only if you have five times solar oxygen abundance, you can produce enough, something like 100 EV in this line, but you also produce oxygen 7 line that I showed you. And in our cases, you have a significant containization, and none of this is seen. So the conclusion is that with current models, it seems to be difficult to reproduce this line. However, the I personally feel that there is still room for uncertainty, because some of the models you actually expect outflows rather than hydrostatic balance, and I think we have to look into that to be certain. On the iron K alpha line reverberation, I will just mention that when you look at the timescales, you will find that the recombination timescale and thermal timescale are short comparative light crossing timescale. However, dynamical timescale is long. So what this implies is that the line profile, the line emissivity, is really a function. A function of the of time, and we had some tests of this, and what you see is that indeed we had a time step variation in the X-ray flux, and after this time step was done, however, the line continued to evolve, especially the helium-like component by more than factor of 4 here, actually. And so the conclusion is that this is not surprising, but you can get those effects, but you know, iron K alpha line is not correlated with X-ray flux on short timescales. Now, let me since I want to talk about low luminosity AGN, let me finish this part. So the observations and theory of iron calpholine emission is an important tool. Complexity of models rivals that of observations, so it's not entirely surprising that situation is complex. Okay, and let me go to the next topic. All right, let me talk about low luminosity AGN. Yesterday we heard that two observers given the same data set will disagree with each other. Well, I'll show you that two theorists, when given the same data set, will also disagree with each other. And we will also disagree with the observers, probably. So now, let me remind you the mystery of these sources. The best example of a low luminosity AGN that we have is our galactic center. Chandra now resolved the inner accretion flow, and from what you can infer, about 10 to minus 4 of Eddington accretion rate. This would give you few times 10 to 40 ergs per second, but what we see is more like 10 to 36. So why? Where does the energy go? Ramesh Narayan and collaborators suggest that, and this is a very nice idea, but a proton temperature is much greater than the electron temperature, so the most of the energy is being advected with the protons into a black hole. However, I personally worry about possibility that there may exist a quiescent standard accretion disk. Quiescent meaning that it's very cold, it's a remnant of a past activity, and hydrogen is completely recombined in this disk, so it's dead, but it's there and it's massive. So in this setup, you would have a hot corona, hot flow that we observe with Chandra, and a cool disk in the midplane that you cannot observe with Chandra. So how can we say, how can we tell whether it's there or not? Well, you expect to see, you expect to have a thermal conduction energy exchange between the two phases. And depending on parameters and circumstances, it can either evaporate the disk or can condense the corona. So that's the simplest equation here that captures the main features of the system. You have this UZ is the vertical velocity of the gas. And let's assume that rho UZ is a constant here. So this is an advection of entropy term. This is the conduction term. This is viscous heating minus radiative cooling. If you have classical Spitzer's conductivity, you would use the first equation below. But because you're talking about very low density plasmas, you really need to talk about saturated heat flux. That is when the mean free path is too long. And then you use this factor phi here to hide your ignorance, not alpha, but it's just as, uncertain as alpha. But it should be smaller than one. Now, if you equal these two, you can find the density at which you must use saturated heat flux. And then you can define the accretion rate. This accretion rate turns out to be of the order of 3 times 10 to minus 3. Where this is a T over T virial for radius of 10 to the 4th volts source radii. So now, let me integrate this equation from the discontinuity between the cold gas and the hot gas to infinity and what you have is approximately this. You can neglect T cold here in this integral. And then this is simply saturated heat flux on the bottom. I'm now assuming that this should be saturated heat flux. And then you have this integral. Let me now assume that you have a standard viscous alpha viscous heating, And the corona is quasi, has a quasi Gaussian density profile with some scale height. So then you can take this integral, and that's what you came out there. In the classical case, thank you, I might, this term is small here, because classical conduction is basically that the limit of classical conduction is when it's small compared with the pressure times Cs. So you have only this term minus this. So you can only condense the corona when cooling is strong enough. And we know that this is definitely not the case for low luminosity AGN, because the density there is so low that this term is nothing. However, here you see that if this term is greater than this term, when you get a minus sign in this equation, and rho times uz should be negative. So you will have conduction, condensation. So to solve this a little bit more carefully, I used Zeus2D. I must thank Daniel Proger for teaching me how to use Zeus. And what I've done here is I assume a cold accretion disk here. It's a Keplerian, it is rotating Keplerially at every radius. When I have a hot wedge of material of 45 degrees here, with temperature of 10 to 7 K, and the density is such that if you used a Bondi formula, you would come out with some accretion rate. In this case, it's 3 times 10 to minus 3 of the Eddington value. And I also assume that it has a somewhat sub-Keplerian angular momentum, in this case of 0.7 of a local Keplerian angular momentum. So what you see is that it starts to flow when it hits the angular momentum barrier, and only after viscosity redistributes angular momentum, this part of the gas can inflow there. And there's also inflow going on here, but the interesting number is what you can look into is how much of the gas is passing through the inner boundary of the hot gas and outer boundary. By the way, I have a logarithmic resolution, so even though it looks, you know, very small here, thank you, there's actually as many zones there as here. So in this particular case, about 50% of the gas goes through the inner boundary, and 50% gets condenses on the cool disk. So this is simply the blow up of the inner 30% or so of the computational domain. So you see it really sort of hydrostatic portion of the flow here. And if I go to, let me go directly to a very low accretion rate case. This is 1,000 times smaller, 3 times 10 to minus 6. What you see here is what, I forgot to tell you what these are, density maps. but you see what the extent of this region is much smaller, and in fact, here you see what the gas is condensing onto the disk. And if I look at the same number, I will get 10 to minus 3 of the only 10 to minus 3 of the gas what is accreted here passes through the boundary. The rest gets accreted, gets condenses on the disk. And that's the blow up of the inner region. So you see what's going on. This region is cooler when in the other case because conduction is more important, and it so gas is slowly settling on the disk here. So now what about spectrum? And I simply ran the same model for a black hole of 3 times 10 to 6, and I made about 5 or so models. And that's the best one I could find. I will remind you that these here are relatively reliable points. These are upper limits. And this is a Chandra bow tie. The fact that it passes through here is a coincidence, but the fact that it doesn't fit too well here is not my fault, it's the fault of the conference organizers, because if it was next week, I would probably found one model that would pass through the thing here. So I think the agreement for such a simple model is not bad. And so my conclusions are that there may be a quiescent accretion disk in our galactic center if F conduction is large enough, and that's not and that's an open issue because well, there are obviously magnetic fields. So what is greater, alpha or this unknown parameter phi? We don't know, and I don't know if we'll find out soon, you know, from just a theory. Independently of whether this model is right or wrong, I claim that the thing in active disk should be an important coolant for the ADAF type models in all low luminosity AGM. And the reason why it is not as luminous as expected in this model is that the gas never makes it to a black hole, not in this millennium anyway, because it will take a significant amount of time. The typical estimates would give you 10 to 4, maybe 10 to 6 years to build up a disk enough to start another cycle. And I think that non-radiative accretion is not a unique explanation of low luminosity AGN. So I think it's still appropriate to question the validity of two temperature assumptions in these objects. So that's it.
Said that the models either give you very low equivalent width when the observed one is about factor of 30 higher, and you said that if you are getting the Lyman alpha oxygen 8 to the correct amount, then the spectrum looks wrong and the iron lines look wrong. But the critical issue here is, if I understand correctly, all these models are single valued with ionization parameter. And there's a lot of lore in the optical UV study that shows that in many of these situations, it's impossible to get the entire emission line from a single ionization parameter. So
well, no. My models are not single emission lines. I mean, not single ionization parameter case. I mean, even in the case of a single radius, I have a range of densities because I have pressure balance. So I start with high density on the bottom, and then the density decreases because of the hydrostatic balance to something very small, effectively zero, on the top of my computational domain. So and on the top of that, I made searches both with the single radius models and also with I have a table model where I stored 3,000 spectra for local spectra, and then basically calculate, integrate over the disk to get, relativistic effects and so on. And the conclusions are similar. So, I'm not entirely convinced that it's necessarily a photoionized line. Because I expect outflows, for example, of gas from magnetic flares, and that could lead to condensation, and condensation may give you a collision on lines. So I think there's still work to be done. And anyway, I think the idea of asking theorists what do we see in objects is somewhat wrong. I mean, the approach that James is taking, I think, is better. But we have we will have better observations, and hopefully that will resolve the issue around our models. So.
The self-consistent structure that you calculate in the ionized reflection model is built on top of a Shakura semiology equilibrium. And you thought about, because after all that equilibrium when it's radiation dominated, which is frequently the case, is unstable multiple ways. Have you thought about what features are robust to likely changes in that structure and which things might change?
Well, I would think that structure of the ionized skin is likely to be similar in both cases, because the X-ray flux can be just so much larger than the viscous dissipation there. However, the parameter space, when exactly you will get this much of ionized skin at this temperature, this may change. This should change if you change the structure of the disk. If you, I know that there are now models showing the radiation maybe leaking out and the disk can be clumpy. So that would obviously change the particular values of when you reach given parameter space. But I think that as you scan for the models, you should see more or less the same, continuum of states.
Except for the effect of disk thickness, because what you do with a cool disk will determine the surface gravity, and that will determine your density.
Sure. Well, that's what I meant. I mean, that's so very important. I agree. Yeah. I think sometime, I understand. Well, I think in some cases, yes. I mean, for example, when the ionized skin is thin enough, and effectively it's a neutral reflection, right? So you get similar results, or highly completely ionized case. But in the intermediate case, I think it would be very difficult to do. And I don't see any simple way to do it. I mean, I thought about, writing a code which would be fast to use to actually fit the data. And the only reasonable approach I could come up with is to make a huge table. And as I understand, it's still not fast enough for observers. So, I don't know.
I didn't catch what the relaxation time of the ion line was in response to continuum variations, but could you say on what time scales we would expect the ion line to be correlated to the continuum X-ray flux?
Well, this was a dynamical time scale, because this is basically hydrostatic balance, so it's the same type of frequency as the rotation frequency of the disk. And the trouble is that this is about the same as the light crossing time. I mean, it's just a fraction of, in the inner disk, there's a fraction of like something like square root of R over RG, right? So this is a relatively small number, few. So there's a possibility that you will confuse the two. That's why I think it's a bit dangerous to not take this effect into account.
For the purposes of reverberation mapping.
Yeah, for the purposes of reverberation mapping. But
on the time scales that we're observing these things and integrating.
Right. Well, I still don't know, because there are other problems, such as when you change a part of the X-ray spectrum, or maybe your optical UV changed, which is less likely, but still is possible. You change the ionization balance in this layer. So the X-ray flux is not the only thing which matters. There are several parameters that determine the output spectrum. So I'm not even sure that it's the right thing to try to correlate the X-ray flux to the line profile. But maybe if you do some more realistic modeling of these things, maybe it'll be possible to make some predictions that will be observed. Huh?
mean, not just to point out that the calculation that Bert found is a special case where the change in equity was pushing the equation from the change in the ionization structure.
Yeah, you're right.
For a more average case where the calculation is neutral and it's saving you from when you have to
yeah, yes.
It just responds to the microscopy time of the equation as well.
Right.
I have a comment on the calculations of Holm and Ederson. Now, what they did, they plotted 2 to 10 kV flux against the K-alpha flux, but the spectrum of this object has a photon index greater than 2. So most of the luminosity is at low energy, and what matters for the K-alpha line is flux about 7 kV. Second, they model, they use a Gaussian plus static reflection fixed at unity independent of the line. So, I mean, I would say that we still should wait until more realistic calculations are done for the same data, whether there is indeed no correlation, right?
Well, I think concerning the first point, is, I recall Andy Fabian mentioning that we've looked into that, and it's not enough to remove, you know, non-correlation. But maybe second effect, what you mentioned, this, yeah. Okay. It'll take a while, but it's not so good. Oh, okay. It's slow for some reason. Okay, yeah.
All right. First of all, what is your X-ray emission mechanism? Is this tilt thermal optimization?
Oh, I forgot. No. It's what I assumed here is, so I have this, hydro run. What I do is I assume Bremsstrahlung emission from every zone that I have in that calculation and integrate it over the computational volume, so which gives you this X-ray part of the spectrum here. The lower energy part of the spectrum is assumed to be just a black body emission from the disk, which is being heated by the saturated X-ray flux. So, to compute that emission, I look at the density and temperature of the last hot zone before a transition happens to the cool disk, and calculate the saturated heat flux, and that gives me the temperature and normalization of the black body part of the spectrum.
And do you predict that one would or would not see an ion
gap flow? Absolutely. Thank you for this question. I forgot to mention that one of the motivations to look into this was that in about half of the low luminosity AGN observed with ASCA, and where you could determine you could see the line and determine the line energy. The line is actually 6.7 kV. Then in the other part, it's at 6.4 kV. Okay, and it definitely argues that you need both a cool matter and a hot matter to produce 6.7 kV line. Because with photoionized disks, you could just never do it, since luminosity is so low, the ionized skin is minuscule. So you need something else. So you would expect to see, because the temperature of these regions that produce this spectrum here is of the order of 10 to 7 K, you expect to see collisionally excited RNK alpha lines, similar to what Narayan and Raymond predicted for ADAF. And also, because of this condensation effect, every iron and oxygen ion that is condensing on the disk will have to recombine, and which so it had to capture all the electrons back, which also should give you ionized lines. I just haven't had time yet to.
Like
Sure, yeah, but you know, there should be some ironic alpha lineup and so on.
So. Interrupt with interesting discussion and thank you.